Clack, clack, what's happening, y'all? Mitchy Slick and Exotic Pop, they teamed up. Killer Collabo, Cherry Lime Punch. Available at all the active spots in Southeast, you already know. Green Cat Liquor, Par Liquor, and Mike's Liquor. Listen, y'all, if you don't got expensive taste, this might not be for you, man. My shit costs a lot, man, but this shit fire. Mix it with all your favorite drinks. You already know, you got it right here. Cherry Lime Punch, Mitchy Slick, Exotic Pop. Catch me in the streets, yeah, that.
When they true to the man and not to the code, they notice the dedication to start to corrode. I wish I would have noticed before it started to unfold. Just think if I would have got blurt when them times that I wrote.
Salute, salute.
Salute, King. What's Bob locking?
What's going on, my brother? Salute. Yeah, we got a special guest in here, ladies and gentlemen. You know, first of all, I would just like to say, you know, I know I appreciate this. I know your time is money. So, you know, how you spend it really counts. And I appreciate, you know, your time. This brother right here has done music with Beanie Man, Mario Winans, Hot Dollar, T-Pain, and Akon. So first, you know, introduce yourself for people don't know who you are and know your story.
Yo, what's good, man? It's Gorilla BLACK, Gorilla Black, man. I'm out of Compton, man. How y'all doing?
Salute, salute. So yeah, man. You know, let the people know where you from, where you was born, where you was raised.
Yeah, man, you know, I was born in Chicago, I was raised out in Compton. You know, that's where my upbringing came from, out in Compton.
Okay, so at what age did you move from Chicago to L.A.?
I moved from Chicago, man, when I was maybe around 7 years old. And, you know, my family, we got land down south, so we ended up taking a brief detour down there for a small, you know, period of time, and then I ended up making it out here, you know, really young out here to California. So had to be here around 8-9 years old by the time I came to Compton.
So I hear Hot Dollar is your brother. Is that your older brother, younger brother?
That's my younger brother. Hot Dollar is my younger brother. He's a little bit younger than me by 2 years.
Okay, okay. Because, you know, I was reading up on him and it says, you know, he was born in Chicago, but raised in Mississippi. Was y'all raised together or?
For us to come back to, you know, come out there to, you know, come out here. And so when we came out here, you know.
Also, y'all came from Chicago to Mississippi, then to California.
You know, she had got an engine on the job and so forth. And so, and it was maybe about eight, nine years old. And so my brother, you know, who ended up, you know, once we got to running around in the streets out here and so forth, then, you know, he ended up getting into some issues. And my mother had sent him back out there for a while. And then he came back, but, you know, most of his life, you know, he's been in Compton.
Okay. So I see your brother, you know, he got songs with Rick Ross and Gucci Man. Like, who started rapping first and, you know, how y'all get into the music?
My brother, you know, I started rapping long, long, long before my brother did. He never thought that it was a viable opportunity for him like that. But he kept seeing me rapping. And so around the time when I was signed to Virgin America, I was on the road for about 7 months and my brother was on the road with me. And so the crazy thing is that I always told him, I said, bro, I said, you need to be prepared for your shot because now you know the ins and outs of the game. You done met everybody in the game. So it just fits you to walk in the game right after me. At least let's keep somebody else from the camp going. Why not you? And you got the ability. So the first thing that I told him was, you know, sat down with him and started teaching him how to write on his head, like not writing on paper. And so once that nigga mastered that, then I was like, now your flow can be natural as you talk. And so that's, you know, how, you know, he came about, and he just got better and better and better, and he developed the skill, and he already was a natural harmonizer. So for him to be able to rap, you know what I mean, was just, it just came secondary. You know, our mother was musical, man, and so I think that it's something that was inherently, you know, in our, you know, DNA. And my mother played piano and organ. You know, I played trombone and trumpet. It was just something that was natural. And we, you know, for him to be able to pick it up at the speed in which he did was just phenomenal. And around that time, what was so crazy is that, you know, my light had died down some and the buzz around me. And he picked up full steam ahead, and, you know, with a good friend of mine, you know, Felly Fell and John Shapiro, we ended up inking a deal with him. You know, he had multiple deals on the table, but we ended up inking a deal over at Def Jam with Island Def Jam with Jermaine Dupri. And right. So that's how he, that's the genesis of Hot Dollar.
Now that's what's up. That's what's up. You say you play instruments. Were you learning in the church or school?
I learned pretty much in school. Eighth grade up at Wendy Middle School in Compton. You know, I just picked it up as a little side thing. And so my mom went to the pawn shop, and she bought me a trombone at the pawn shop. And so when she did, I picked up, my mom never knew how to read music. But the crazy thing was, is that when I got a trombone, you know, you got to play, you know, the musical compositions that the band teacher actually giving you. And every week you battle for first and second and third chair. And so I just picked it up so naturally with reading it and hearing it. But ultimately, it wasn't something that I had pursued. It was just something that my mom put me in. And when she put me in it, I just picked it up. And so when I was sliding off with the homies, we'll still have our instruments, but we'll be playing everything that was on the radio at the time. You know, whether it was Vanilla Ice or whether it was anything that was on the radio, we was playing it by ear, literally through, you know, our instruments. And so my homeboy, he played trumpet. And so, you know, when you got an instrument, they give you this, you know, disinfectant spray, and he started teaching me the notes on his trumpet. I didn't know how to read the notes on trumpet, but I knew how to play the notes by what he taught me and by me able to pick it up from ear. So I learned how to play his instrument as well. And it just, I picked it up quite naturally. And during that time, I was just so experimental with music.
No, that's crazy. That's dope. So how did you get into the rapping and things like that?
Oh, during like the eighth grade. So during that time span, and that time, I would always be freestyling. And so, you know, I'd be freestyling with the homies. It just was, I had a different inclination and a different way of, you know, being able to rhyme with words, because I was just so influenced by music at the time that you could just definitely tell the difference. And now looking back at it in hindsight, I would see how niggas' faces would look when I would jump into the circle. And I'm freestyling. So that's when I realized, like, damn, maybe this may be something. And I always liked the DJ end of it, but I just realized that I had the ability to put words together very well. And so once I started doing that, I just realized that, hey, you know what? Maybe I'll start writing my words. I'll write my words. And I started writing them. And so that's where that came from, me writing the words. And yeah, I would write. So that's how that came about.
So how did you break into the industry and like that?
Well, that all came about much, much later. One of the first persons that was, you know, working with me was my man, you know, one of my big homies. And so when he realized that I had the ability to sit down and put words together, and that I could actually put stuff in motion to that degree and on that level. And when he seen that was the play, like, he was like, look, man, I'm finna open up one of my houses out here in Rancho Cucamonga. And what he ended up doing was buying a bunch of studio equipment. And when he bought all of that studio equipment and so forth, that's pretty much how my introduction into that actually came about. And so that introduction came, you know, relatively early out, because the first person that really understood that I knew how to, you know, that I had the ability was my man Ice-T. And so during that time, Ice-T would, I would be introduced to him by my by one of my mentors. And that was the first time when, you know, I had to really understand how to count bars and understand the microphone. Hey, wow. How's that window open? So pretty much that's how that came about, is me going about into the studio.
That's what's up. That's what's up. That's, I never
when,
knew that.
When it, because yeah, it got real serious when I was introduced. Like I was saying, is whenever I ended up linking with Ice, is when I realized, you know, that I really didn't know as much as I thought I had previously knew about music. Right. And you know, the thing of it is he was the first person to tell me, you need to have your stuff written and you need to understand the count, because I was rhyming all over the place instead of being able to sit into the pocket of the beat. I didn't understand what a bar count was. I didn't understand, you know, how to count 8 bars, 16 bars, 24 bars, 8-bar hook. I didn't understand any of those things. So Ice was the first person, you know, through, you know, constructive criticism to break it all down to me and let me know, hey, man, it need to be sounding like this. And when you come in here, you don't need to be reading off no paper, man. You need to know what you're going to be rapping about. You need to know it by heart. And so that was the first person that really came into, you know, my epicenter and just sat me down on a real level and was able to open up to me and understand, you know, how, what my approach was and what my approach should be and the things that I should say and how clever it should be. And, you know, all of those different things that come with being, you know, a lyricist. And so Ice was that first dude to really do that. And so with that, you know, I'll forever, you know, be grateful. And he's a mentor to me. And so with that being said, he was the first person to really take things to a whole new perspective for me. And he was able to sit me down. And so with that understanding and guidance with my man Rich and with my other partner, they, you know, ended up getting a spot out of Rancho Cucamonga. And we just loaded it up with a lot of, you know, equipment. And so that was the, that was my first endeavor, and that was quite some time ago, over 20-something years ago. But nevertheless, you know, that's where I learned, you know, how to control the microphone, how to write, you know, and stay, you know, in pocket with the beat and how to develop hooks. And, you know, all of those things is things that I learned there.
Now, that's real, like, because, you know, that for you to learn that from a legend, like, that's real right there.
Right, right. And so at that time, he had a record company called Coroner Records. And, you know, Ice was still around making music. And people don't know Ice is a very, very lyrical person, even to this day, man. His skill level has always been at a very, very high level, man. So to be able to be around someone like him with metaphors and punches and, you know, double entendres and things of that nature, man, is something that I was able to witness firsthand from a legend. And so it only set the bar really, really high for me to scale and for me to be able to continuously, you know, grow over that span of time while I was around him and in his presence. And so being able to see that with a bunch of different MCs that was coming up along the way at the same time, that was very, very talented and so forth out of his camp, you know, was something that was, you know, phenomenal for me and my growth.
Right. And on top of his talent, he's a genius with the business and things all and things of that nature. So, yeah, that's a blessing.
Right.
So,
exactly.
So, how did you get the song with Beanie Man?
Man, it was so crazy because, you know, I come from the old school, and in the old school, we would just cut a lot of records, man. And with us cutting those records, man, during the time at my time at Virgin, I had cut over 100 records, and so I'll never forget that song was a song, the beat, the sample was a Sister Nancy sample, and it was the one that was in the beginning of the Belly movie, and that's where I knew it to be and come from. And so at that time and in that span, I ended up just, you know, took that and took it to my man Carlos Brody, and we were down in Memphis, and so as soon as I told him what it was, he was able to find the record, pull the record up, sample it, and put the beat together, and it was crazy. And I never forget, I must have wrote my verses on my face, and it was about 15 minutes later, and I had three verses already. And so after I had did those three verses, it never had a hook. And so I didn't know that Beanie Man was my label mate. And so I'll never forget, I went to Virgin offices up on Wilshire, you know, inside of the Capitol building. And I never forget, Pete Farmer was like, man, watch when you hear this. What they had ended up doing was sending the record out to Beanie Man, and Beanie Man made a hook, and he recorded the hook in Jamaica. And I mean, he killed it. He literally murdered that song. Right, exactly.
So how you feel about comparing you to Biggie Smalls and stuff like that?
I mean, you know, the comparisons has always been there with any MC, man. I think it was more apparent for myself with me, with the similarities in our look. And, you know, both of us being dark-skinned, heavy-set dudes, I think that was one of the biggest things. The way that I think about it and I look at it is that, you know, when you look at the entirety and the body of work that Biggie did, man, and the way that he rhymed and the way that he was able to craft rhymes, even came close to that, man. Right. And for people to compare me to something on that level is, I mean, to me, it's insurmountable, you know, because the level in which he did it and he was at with it, I mean, I don't think that I'm nowhere near it or ever have been near it. And so with that being that, I just think people really need to listen, seriously listen to the body of work, and you'll definitely understand that. I mean, Big was definitely one of the greatest. And he's really pretty much one of those, you know, icons and one of those MCs that pretty much influenced everything that we know musically today in the genre. So, you know, I think more than anything, people sometimes they jump to conclusions more than they do. You know, throughout hip hop, that the comparisons have always been there. Like, if you look at it today, and you look at Designer and Future, or if you look at before Fabulous, you know, there was Mace. Or if you look at, you know, Jay-Z, there was LL Cool J and Jazzo. I mean, the comparisons is always there. I mean, before it was me, it was Shine they compared to me. So, I mean, and when you listening to Shine, you could tell the difference immediately. When you listen to me, you could tell the difference immediately. I think more than anything, people took the visuals of me being my complexion and my size more than anything, instead of the content of what I was actually saying and listening to it to that degree. And they just, you know, categorized it and put it in a box. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I thank God that he was able to open up the doors that he did for me. And I just pray that people just really sit down and look and listen and, you know, just take a better look at everything. And you'll definitely see Biggie is one of those, you know, icons that have did it at a level that very, very few MCs, and still even in this history that we've had, in this vast amount of history throughout our musical landscape, I don't think anyone has ever been able to duplicate or even get near it.
All right, I got a two-part question right here. First, how did you get your music on, you know, that the video game 187 on Ride or Die? Because I know at that time, you know, it wasn't really, you know, they do it more now. And the second question is, how did you get to become like the voice of one of the characters on the game?
Oh, well, it was so crazy. The actual guy who put that video game together, he had reached out to a longtime friend and, you know, my manager, which is Jimmy Hinchman. And so when they reached out or whatever, not, he was one of the execs or one of the top people over at Ubisoft. And so they had gave me a budget to actually cut the soundtrack for it, and I was going to be a character inside of the game. And so from there, I remember I just went on ahead and I did all of the voiceovers for it in the studio, and I ended up recording all of the records, and I ended up flying out to France and working with the people at Ubisoft. So it all came about through mutual friends, you know, and they were able to put all of that together.
That's what's up. That's what's up. So how was it like doing the voice? Like, how was like, how was it like recording, and like how, after you heard it, like, how did you feel?
I mean, definitely it was dope, man. It was already scripted, everything that they really wanted me to say throughout the game. It's just like reading a movie line. And so you just going in and making sure that the intensity of it is right, and then it matches the character in which I was playing. And so that's how that came about, me reading the script and matching the intensity of it. And afterwards, man, I think about it in hindsight. It's crazy because a lot of interviews, nobody never bring up that video game. But that video game, man, I had a lot of fun doing it. And I'll never forget all of the people that was involved with me, you know, not only here, you know, in the States, but also in France over there and at Ubisoft. So it was memorable, and I definitely enjoyed it.
So, you know, I like to, you know, I'm all about the babies, the youth community, and things of that nature. And I know if people know your story, or they could go look and all of that. But, and I know you've been through things, situations in your career, in your life. Like, if you can have a message, you know, to give to the youth, you know, what would that be?
Man, discipline, man. Discipline. You know, we look at people for their talents and their gifts. And God give each one of us talents, and he gives each one of us gifts. And so for everybody and every youth that's out there listening, God is giving you an inherited talent that only you possess. But it doesn't matter. We measure people in this life by their talents, but we rarely mention the word discipline. Discipline. See, LeBron is a very talented, very gifted basketball player, but no one speaks about his discipline. So when we look at him and we watch him do these great moves and these feats of acrobatic, I mean, that's acrobatic, that's incredible on the floor, and we see the skill that he possesses, we know that he's incredibly gifted, but it takes extreme amounts of discipline day in and day out to show up before the rest of his teammates, almost an hour out, and to continuously practice over and over and over that jump shot from this angle, from that angle, from this angle, from that angle. See, people don't see the discipline. So anyone who wanna do anything that is gonna be great, no matter how talented you are, it doesn't matter whether you're an artist, it doesn't matter whether you're an athlete, it doesn't matter what it is that you may want to do in this life. Discipline is the foundation of that. And if you discipline at a young age, you discipline yourself. If you want to become a real estate mogul, if you want to become a doctor, it's going to take extreme amounts of discipline. And if you start early disciplining yourself, then you set yourself up. You set yourself up to win, because that discipline is going to outweigh hanging out. That discipline is going to outweigh sitting on your phone scrolling for hours and hours. That discipline is going to have you so immersed in your craft, whatever that craft may be, that everything else is going to seem like it doesn't exist. That discipline is your passion. So whatever your passion is, you have to really develop discipline within that passion. And you won't really realize that you're even doing it. It won't even seem like it's work, because it's your passion and you're disciplined enough to know that you want to become what you want to become. So you're going to take the necessary steps to get there.
So, real talk. Amen. Amen. Now, you know, if people know your story, like I said, and look into it, you know, throughout your career, you had different issues with different rappers and things. So now we come to the internet, and, you know, people are trolling and, you know, using controversy to come up in the industry or the game, or, you know, try to get noticed and clout. like, what advice would you give to the youth who thinks, you know, this is a good way to, you know, make it into the...
Listen, ultimately, you got to understand, I come from a different era and a different age. You know, throughout my history, I've had quite a bit of beefs with other artists. And those artists, I had to understand the difference between me and those artists. And I had to come to understand that I'm really from the streets. See, everybody say they from the streets, ain't from the streets. They have dabbled in the streets. They may be associated to a degree with the streets, but they wasn't, they didn't come out the mud of them streets. And so I had to understand that the moment that I involved myself with something and with the people that came up with me from the streets, that it could become real street real fast, where people and the possibility of them getting hurt was inevitably a real scenario. And I had to become the bigger person. In this day and age, it's a lot of trolling. There's a lot of clout chasing. There's a lot of doing it for the gram and, you know, getting the namesake from it. And I think, you know, it's changed the way that the game is. But you got to understand something. You know, when it goes to those levels, there's no coming back from it. It's real dudes that really live in the streets on a day-to-day basis. And you got to understand, I come from the era, we didn't want to be seen. We didn't want to be in photos. We didn't want to know, let jump on the gram with guns. And we didn't want people, we wasn't selling wolf tickets over the phone. And we wasn't wolfing. It was real, man. Like, I seen too many real dudes die right next to me. I seen dudes really, really hold top of their head gone. They family sitting there, and I mean, the morgue just sitting out there, and they still trying to analyze the situation, and his whole top gone. I mean, I seen too much to play with it. And I think more than anything, man, if that's the route that you choose to take, understand, with every action, there's a reaction. So you have to be careful and cautious of what you do and what you say and how you say it and who you saying it to and what extent that this may go to. I mean, I understand that it can get real, and it can get real, real fast. I just served almost 9 years in a federal correctional facility. I've been released, and I've been home almost a year now. And even in there, me being an artist, regardless, I was still on count. Regardless of my namesake and who I was, it was ultimately real in there. And it was always real. And it was just as real as the streets is, and even realer, because there is no place to hide. There is no place to run. You can't just, you know, everything is verified and documented. They really want to see that paperwork. You know, it is no, oh, I'm so-and-so. No, people can find out who you are from the streets. That's the age and the era that I came up with. And it's so easy now to jump on the internet with a bunch of fake chains and flash some bread and some sticks and poles in your hand and say you the one. I came from an era that didn't exist. Right. Dudes really went and checked who you was. I could make a phone call throughout L.A., Compton, and Watts and tap in with somebody to know who you was from your neighborhood, and they could give me your story on who you was and what was and what it wasn't, and bam, bam, bam. Now, dudes is able to sit up with the power of a handheld device and roll up them wood and jump on there with a bunch of chains on and really be on a level of on something that they've never been and become something that they never was and talk the way you know, talk real big on these internets like that. And it's a new world for me because this is something that's new to me. I come from something different. And so all I say is that if this is what you're going to do and this is how you're going to do it, just be careful, man, and understand that everybody play different. Some people playing for keeps out here. They playing for keeps. And the thing about it is you can't, once it go to that level, I understood that even the dudes that I beefed with, once it went to that level, it ain't no getting it back. Once them shells start flying, them slugs moving, ain't no recalling nothing. Ain't no squashing nothing. And as easy as it started with words or differences, now life is on the line. And you can't replace a life. It's gone. So if this is what you're doing and you got a playful way of doing it to get your clout up and I don't know how to do nothing other than what I have done over the last, 30 years of my life. But I can say, please be careful on who you trolling, because that dude might pop up where you at. And if he pop up where you at, all that sitting there with the camera in your hand woofing can change in a matter of seconds. And I live like that. Like, I don't woof or yap or whatever. I'd rather see a man and me and that man look each other in the eye. I don't need everybody else to know the extent of what it is. And if he chooses to do that, then believe you me, as well, I understand. I'll never deliver back like that. I'll never do that because I understand that, hey, man, look, once it get to that point, anybody and everybody, I had a dude stand over me and shoot me 5 times. Mm. So, and I come from that era. So I know somebody will take your life. They'll take the breath out of your lungs. And it ain't no game. It's very, very serious. So if you jumping out there, you trolling, and you jumping out there and you woofing, and he this and he that, yo, man, be prepared to meet that with the fullest extent, man. Be prepared. And that's just what it is. I come from that era. Like, I done seen it on multiple occasions. So, yeah, that's what I got to say about that.
Shit, that was real talk right there. That was real talk. I appreciate your time. I got one more last question before you go. Let the people know, what you got going on currently, where they can find you, what platforms you on, and things of that nature.
Man, everybody can find me at Official Gorilla Black. I know I'm new to Instagram, but I'm at Official Gorilla Black. And, I'm cutting more and more records. I've recorded almost close to 70 records now, and we're gearing up for a new mixtape. We're really working really, really hard, man, with some investors, and so we're getting ready to work and put together us a project. I won't speak too soon. I'm definitely in the works with a lot of things right now since I've been home. You can go there. You can also go to my website. I've created a hair care product line, which is called hairgods.com. The world's strongest hair elixir. And I've sat down and researched and did a lot of things, and me and my brother, we've owned barbershops and hair salons since 2006, which we currently own to this day. And so we've came up with our own products, for African-American women and for African-American men to actually grow their hair, and not only just grow it, but to keep it on a healthy hair regimen. So definitely go to my website, which is called hairgods.com. Also, go to my Instagram at Official Gorilla Black.
You have anything on YouTube currently?
Yeah, I got stuff on YouTube as well. I got a lot of new records that I've cut since I've been home that's on YouTube as well. So definitely, man. Okay.
All right, so salute, my brother. I appreciate you. Like I said, man, I wish you all the best.
Definitely, definitely, King. Definitely. You definitely keep hearing from me, man. Anytime, man. Y'all reach out. Definitely. I don't mind, you know, doing y'all interviews or whatever y'all ask of me, man. Definitely. Just always hit me up, man. And so I'm just working.
Down.